What is up, everybody? Scott Hartnell is dancing in studio as we begin this episode of Puck Culture. I guess this is your first time being here where the music is embedded live as we record, right?
This is unbelievable. This is way better than the first podcast that we had.
It's already better. It's been 8 seconds and it's already a better show.
I feel more relaxed. I'm in these nice comfy chairs.
Right.
Good company.
Oh, thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. You know what? We're going to have really good company this episode. I'm so excited about our guest today is the executive producer of the Ellen DeGeneres Show, Andy Lassner, making time to talk hockey. If you've never heard of him, which I would find hard to believe because he's super popular, huge Kings fan, grew up in New York, used to be a Rangers fan. He's going to join us to talk all things hockey and mostly Kings in a little bit.
Andy, they call him, but
yeah,
I think he's pretty amazing. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't think he's average at all.
No,
I think he's definitely above average. But it is holiday season, Scott. I haven't really talked to you in a while, and we're getting closer and closer to the holidays. And, you know, I got in this conversation the other day with a friend of mine about holiday cards. I don't send out a holiday card.
You should.
And they were giving me a little bit of crap for it. And I was like, no. Like, first of all, it's a lot of effort. Second of all, I feel like holiday cards are a family thing. They're like for people that are married and have a kid. You know, I have a boyfriend, but I'm not going to take like a holiday picture and like send it out to everybody.
You don't want
to with my boyfriend. It's nothing to do with the commitment, Emmett, if you're listening, it's nothing to do with that. But I just think that holiday cards are very nice and I like getting them, but I don't think that everybody has to. I don't think it's a bad thing if you don't do them. Do you do them?
Yes, I've done them. This year we did it with my son and my wife.
See?
Obviously,
family.
It was a very kind of candid picture. My son was smiling, which was great. We weren't dressed up in the Christmas outfit by the tree. It was something in kind of late fall when the pumpkins were out, but we did it. I remember my first marriage, we did it, and we just sent a picture of me and my ex-wife on our wedding.
Yeah.
And it was like, I looked terrible, and she sent it out to all like our friends in Nashville on the team.
But she looked good?
Well, yeah. And I got so much flack, and I'm like, I'm never doing another family postcard. This is embarrassing. Don't want to do it. But but life is good, and I definitely do it.
Yeah, see, but I think like you have a family, so it like makes sense.
We could take one right now, very candid, you know, by NHL Tonight.
You know what? Like the friend that I had this discussion with was like, no, you're in the perfect spot. Like when you have a family, it has to be like nice and it has to be about the kids. She's like, you could do one that's like super funny where you dress up as Elf and do something ridiculous and like send it out with like, you know, like a fake family. And I'm like, okay, well played. You're funnier than me. Like that's what I probably should have done.
I think everyone would get a good chuckle out of it.
You that's think
what
so?
It's, yeah, absolutely.
Well, like, you know, laughing is what it's all about. And over the last couple of weeks in the NHL, I've been laughing so much just because of the chirps that we've seen on the ice, off the ice, teams chirping their own players. I mean, where should we begin? I'll start with you because you're the perfect person to have on this show to talk about chirping. I feel like you were a chirper in your day.
I was a big chirper. I always like to keep things loose. You know, I grew up with two older brothers that kind of, you know, pounded me and kind of made fun of me, and I always had to kind of get back at them. And so I kind of, I would consider myself very witty and kind of, you know, think on your feet. You got to be quick in this game. If someone kind of makes fun of you about something, you got to have something to come right back at them. And, you know, through the years, there's obviously a lot I forget, but, you know, a couple classic ones come up. Rupper, he brought something up to me when we first started working here at the NHL Network.
Yeah. Oh, I'm curious. Didn't tell me this before the show. I'm excited.
I think I didn't have a goal in the first 20 games in Philly, and I was my big contract. And, you know, he's like, oh, Hartnell, you're overpaid. I'm like, well, better to be overpaid than underpaid, right? And, you know, he's like, he didn't have anything to say after that.
So, he got me.
I don't know if that's a chirp, but it's just a good comeback just to kind of, you know, shut the other guy up.
Yeah, some of the best chirps probably are the ones that, like, you didn't think about or didn't plan. They just sort of happen in the heat of the battle or the heat of the moment, so to speak.
Yeah, and another one that just came to my head, Cam Atkinson. He's my stallmate in Columbus, and I was sitting on 299 goals, and it was like 7-8 games going, and I couldn't obviously buy a goal there in the last game of the year. And he goes to me, he goes, he was at like 120 goals in his career. He goes, hey, if you're not careful, I'm going to catch you. I'm going to hit 300 before you do. And I was so mad. I said, hey, don't worry about it. I scored my first goal when you were still in diapers, you know? So,
nice.
So I kind of shut him up a little bit too. So
yeah, you and Cam Atkinson, you guys are boys, right? Because I remember you doing an interview on NHL Now when you were still playing, and you were talking about Cam Atkinson.
Yeah, Cam's the best. He's a competitor. He's a fun guy. He loves life, and he's very comical as well with his chirps. And we got at it pretty good, and just we're both in the same stage of life right now, so we FaceTime quite a bit just to kind of see.
Do you ever get advice from each other? Like, yo, my kid just did this. Is this normal?
Yeah, well, my kid is way more advanced than Cam's kid, so no, you'd shoot me if
clip
you hear that.
Clip that and send it to yeah. Cam. He's exactly. on Twitter, right?
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah.
We're going to have to clip that and send it to
you,
him.
Cam.
Yeah, we'll get some chirping going on social media between you two. Was there more chirping when you played between opponents on the ice, or does more chirping happen in the room between teammates, would you say?
There's nothing better than getting a good one on your teammate. You know what I mean? Like, it's at practice, somebody falls down on a breakaway, you're doing shootouts or anything like that. But when you can do it live in a game, and you know, I wouldn't say there's research, but you kind of ask you know, some of your teammates if they know something that's going on, or
right.
you know, this guy's cold, this guy, you know, stay away from this guy. But you just kind of it's not a learned trait. It's kind of got to be natural if you can kind of have those good chirps.
Well, McDavid, you know, one of the best players, arguably the best player on planet Earth, had a little bit of a hiccup, let's call it, last night. Would that be chirping material?
Oh, absolutely. It would have been even better if Edmonton would have won the game. They end up losing 6-3, but it's 3-1. They have a 5-on-3 power play. A guy puts his hand on the puck. Obviously, Connor McDavid's going to take that shot. And he goes in stick handling,
yeah.
and he puts it outside the blue line. And, you know, I was like, oh, man, the best player in the world can do that. I don't feel so bad about my
right?
about
it
my
kind
shots.
Of was like, okay, if that can happen to him, it's all good.
Exactly.
But I'm sure guys in the room, like, are replaying oh. that. They've got it on tape.
Oh, yeah, it would be for sure. I'd ask the coach to put that on the next thing. First clip of you know, you kind of do the reviews, defensive zone, offense,
right.
whatever. That'd be the first clip, absolutely, and have a good laugh at Connor's expense.
I'm putting you on the spot a little bit here, but, like, what's the most embarrassing thing you've done during a game or a practice or with the boys that, like, they just did not let you live down?
One of the most embarrassing things, probably in Nashville, when I was with Nashville, and we were in Edmonton, and I was on the ice, and somebody broke a stick from a shot, and it was laying on the ground. And after the whistle, I just, you know, kind of flung it up, and it went so high, it got stuck up like 40 feet into the netting above the glass.
Shut up.
And I was like, oh,
what?
Man, did anyone see that? And I was just like, you know, I just felt embarrassed because I knew something. I was going to get a penalty or like.
Did you get a penalty?
I got a 10-minute misconduct for being stupid, basically. And I was like, oh, man. So anyways, they had to bring out like the huge ladder to go up there, and then they had to get a stick and try and like shake the thing off, and it came down. So it was like a 4 or 5 minute
delay. The ultimate delay of game.
Oh, I was so mad, or I was so upset, and then I get kicked. It was like 8 minutes to go in the game, so I just left because I had a 10-minute misconduct.
Right.
And I get into the room, and there was a couple guys that weren't playing that night, and they were just like shaking their head at me, making me feel so stupid. And, you know, basically, and then people forget about it and kind of move on. So
and then you move on.
Learn from your mistakes, though. Don't do that again.
That's one of those ones, like, you don't mean to do it, and then when it happens, you're like, oh, man,
you feel so stupid.
Worst.
So stupid, yeah.
I interviewed Matt Barnaby once, and, you know, he was a tough customer in his day, and he told me he used to try to do research on the opposing players so that he could find a way to get under their skin. And when you watch, you know, Barnaby highlights, he was pretty good at that. Have you ever taken it to that level or no?
Well, I remember Sean Avery, and, you know, he wrote his whole book, and I was in there a couple pages, whatever, but...
How did you feel about being talked about in his book?
It didn't
Do you
really
not
matter.
Mind?
Yeah, he is what he is, and whatever, but he was chirping me. I was going through my divorce, and he was like, oh, yeah, your wife sizzled you for all this money and whatever, and,
ooh,
and I was...
Whoa,
this
whoa.
Is not a face-off, and I didn't know if he wanted me to punch him in the face. I didn't really... care about my ex-wife, right? So I was like, whatever. And then I just looked at him, I'm like, oh, don't be mad, she's richer than you. And so anyways, he kind of looked at me, he's like, oh, you weren't supposed to say that, you know, like saying one of those things, you think quick on your feet, and you know, something that
that's
I'll never
forget. So funny. I like want to shake your hand over that comeback. That's so good. She's got more money than you, so sucker. What did you think of the Joe Thornton Tom Wilson exchange? I'm sure you saw it, right? Where
yep.
where Wilson ended up saying, you know, I got my ring. And he, you know, Joe Thornton had said to him, you wouldn't fight Ryan Reeves. And he said, yeah, well, I ended up getting a ring. So, and Reeves didn't, alluding to the Capitals Vegas
thing. Yeah, I thought it was to Joe Thornton saying that I've got the ring and you don't, but he
as
was.
Did I.
Yeah, and he said it to Reeves, you know, talking about the final series. But, you know, same thing. You're thinking quick on your feet. You're going at each other. Blood's boiling. You know, your emotions are going. And, you know, it's there's nothing better than catching those things with the mics nowadays in the NHL.
Like I wish we got more of it.
Everything's got, everything we're saying is obviously being recorded. But for them, hockey players, it's in the heat of the moment. And some of those things are just too candid, too great.
Fans love that stuff, right? But there's a reason that every player's not mic'd up and that we can't hear everything that goes on during a game. And, you know, we in the media and different people like to talk about the line. Is there a line on the ice when it comes to chirping or not? I know that what gets said on the ice stays on the ice. Like, no one would ever really, you know, throw anyone under the bus. But
some people have crossed the line where it's like, you know, don't say that. You don't bring up personal stuff, you know, a.k.a. Sean Avery with me. But,
right.
But it is what it is. Some people are like that. But, you know, for me, it was always above the belt and you know, they're right in front of you. And usually it was something that happened in that game or whatever. And you miss an open net. And, you know, another guy missed an open net. You're like, oh, I would have never missed that one. And then, you know, sure enough, karma will come back and get you. You know, later on in the game, you have an empty net and you miss it. But it's a great sport. I miss it so much. And, you know, I make fun of my wife a lot, and she, you know, she gives it right back to me.
Any good relationship, you got to be able to make fun of each other, I think.
You got to have thick skin, absolutely.
One more quick one, because I feel like talking about chirping and getting under the opposition's skin, yep. I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't ask you this question. What is the key to getting under the skin of Sidney Crosby?
Well, when he first came
back
in the league...
Back then, I guess, maybe is a better way to phrase it.
When he first came in the league, he was a big whiner. I bet you he would probably admit that. He was always complaining to the refs. He was always getting the calls. He was always doing this. And it was just like, it was whine.
Right. That was a storyline back then,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and then I think, I don't know if someone said something to him, Mario, or he just kind of realized, okay, I can't be doing this because everyone's calling me a whiner. Like, am I a whiner? So fast forward.
As you get older, too, you kind of grow up.
And the Pittsburgh-Philly rivalry, obviously, and you know, that was something that you could always kind of get, you know, stop whining, Sid, just kind of call him a whiner, you know, give him an extra little bump, you know, after a whistle. And obviously he's the best player in the game still, and you know, was then, so it's, you can't really bug that guy, but you tried your best anyway.
You try to contain him, so the only way to really get him off his game is to affect him somehow, or try to affect him mentally, right?
Try to, yeah.
So when he got past the whining stuff, was it just like hacking at him and bugging him the whole game until he eventually gets fed up?
Yeah, you don't want to obviously take a penalty or anything like that, but just try to bump him every time you get. You know, after a whistle, you're going towards the bench. You kind of give him a little whack on the back of the legs. And
Just annoying stuff, right?
You do that enough, the blood starts boiling a little bit, and you're going to get a reaction, and that's when you know you're doing a good job.
All right, so now that you're done playing, I said I was going to ask you one more question, but I'm adding another one as we speak. Now that you're done playing, you're not playing for the Flyers anymore. You're not part of the Pittsburgh-Philly rivalry. You cross paths with Sidney Crosby in a hallway. What's the conversation like?
I would just say, hey, how you doing? I've met him a few times outside of the rink, and you know, I have a lot of respect for him. And you know, I'm sure he'd say the same about me. But I just say, hey, what's up, man?
It feels like that's kind of the norm in these crazy rivalries. That, like, you know, no matter what, even when. No matter what happens on the ice, the fights, the brawls, all of that stuff, when you guys are off the ice, there really is a level of respect for the most part all the players.
Unless somebody goes too far and you know, a cheap play on the ice, or somebody says something too far, then it might cross the line.
Well, then you end up in Sean Avery's book.
There you go. There you go.
All right, let's get to our guest, because you and I both spent a lot of time last night doing our research, of course, and watching Ellen DeGeneres clips, because our guest today is the executive producer of the Ellen DeGeneres Show, Andy Lassner. Andy, thanks for doing the show. We are so pumped to have you on. We think you're fantastic.
You have no idea. This is such a big deal to me. I mean, hockey is my life. I work with celebrities all day. Don't really care. Talking to Scott Hartnell now, kind of like an 11-year-old girl.
Oh,
you're making me blush, Andy. You're making me blush. Thanks for the kind words.
This is what makes me happy.
Well, Hartsy, you know, as we all know, Hartsy, one of the bigger personalities to ever play for the Flyers, so I'm not at all surprised. And your chirp game, Scott, was always on point, so people love that.
And he's a fighter, and he's a penalty taker. he's what makes hockey fun. He's entertaining.
Yeah, and he had the epic flow, the epic hair too in his playing days, eh, Andy?
Great hair. Which is so important.
You're just full of compliments. I appreciate it.
That's a great start to the interview.
I know. This is going real well so far.
Andy, I'll start here for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with your background. You're from New York, but you're a Kings fan now. So how did you get into hockey, and how did you end up becoming a diehard fan of the Kings?
I had a friend who had season tickets to the Rangers. And he would take me to games, and I would go maybe two a year when I was really young. And I just got obsessed. And we used to stay after the Ranger games to get autographs from guys like Barry Beck and Ron Duguay. You probably don't remember them.
Oh, I know the names. Oh, yeah. I know the names.
and Ron Greschner and Nick Fatiu, and those were and they were the nicest guys. And because of that, I just like was, this is the greatest sport, and it was exciting and it was fun. And my dad would take me to a baseball game, and I'd be like, this is the slowest thing I've ever seen in my life. And once you go to a live hockey game, there's just no other sport. And then I just became a diehard Ranger fan, and part of it was the quest that we hadn't won a cup in forever since, you know, and going to games and everyone chanting 1940 to make fun of us that we hadn't won a cup.
Yeah.
And then to ride that through and win the cup was insane. And then I moved to L.A. for work and was still, you know, still going to Kings games only when the Rangers played, and wearing my Ranger jersey.
Amazing. Which was, respect.
Which is hilarious, you know, that happens here, because now that I'm a Kings season ticket holder, like last night was a Ranger game, half the arena are Ranger fans because there's so many transplants here. When I was growing up, if you went to a Ranger game and wore any other jersey besides a Ranger jersey, you got beat up. I mean, that's just what happened. You just didn't do it. And it's hilarious here how everyone is just so nice to each other. It's just a different culture. But yeah, what happened was I had kids, and I exposed them to no other sports, so they'd have no interest in anything else.
I love that.
I took them to hockey, started taking them to hockey games when I got season tickets. And, you know, it's hard to go every night and not sort of fall in love with the game.
Yeah.
And then obviously the hardest thing was when the Kings played the Rangers for the cup. That was really rough for me, because you know, I still have I still love the Rangers, but I wanted the Kings to win the cup. But so, you know, anybody in New York, all my friends, my brother, they cannot believe that I'm a Kings fan. They refuse to accept it.
That's great. What was the turning point? Was there a specific game that you turned your allegiances to the LA Kings? And obviously, being a fan of the Kings, now you've got a couple cups in your back pocket, so that's pretty impressive. But was there one key instance where you kind of said, okay, screw you, Rangers, I'm a Kings fan now?
It wasn't just one game. I'll tell you what was a big moment was the first ever game I took my boys to, they were like 5 years old, and we were playing the Red Wings. And before the game, they wanted jerseys, so maybe they were six. And I bought them Kings jerseys. And by the third period, it was like 4-0 Red Wings. And my son turned to me and said, can we get Red Wings jerseys? And at that moment, I was like, nope, we're Kings fans. And I realized I needed to teach them about being a fan. So it was kind of at that moment where I was like, okay, I have to have allegiance. And you start, you know, getting invested in the players. And I hadn't followed the Rangers for a while, so it wasn't any of the same players that had won the cup in 94. And I don't know, I just became a Kings fan. It just happened. But I still love the Rangers. I need to say that. I do love them.
So the Rangers being a lot higher in the standings than the Kings right now, are you a little bit disappointed in the Kings this season so far, being last in the league?
Oh, heartbroken. you know, when you're a fan, it consumes you. Not for everyone, but for me, it defines my mood. It defines how I feel about things, whether
my team
wins or loses. And this is hard. You know, I'm buying into the idea that we're rebuilding, but it is hard to go from winning two cups in 3 years and then having a couple rough years and then another rough year and then another rough year. So, yeah, it's frustrating, but, you know, to go to a game last night and watch them beat the Rangers, you know, it felt good just because I see that they do have the potential to win games.
Absolutely.
Apparently not on the road.
You know. Oh, my, I love it. You know your stuff. You know, it's interesting because now in sports with Twitter and social media and everything, people look at a team like the Kings, right? And they go, oh, you've won your cups. Like, what do you care if they're not doing well this season? It's like, no, like, just ask Drew Doughty.
Oh,
it's
God.
Frustrating.
It's
you want to win.
It's even harder when you win the cup because anything less than the cup becomes a letdown.
Yeah, you know how good it can be.
It was fun when I was a Ranger fan and I was, you know, heading towards the cup. It was all exciting, and then once they won it, you just kind of expect it, and when they don't, it's heartbreaking.
Well, let me ask you this: being out in LA and being a season ticket holder and diehard Kings fan, you've watched them win a couple of cups. Have you been to a Stanley Cup party? I assume you must have.
You know, here's the thing: after they won the cup, I was friendly with the team doctor. I'm friendly with a lot of the players and personnel, and it's only for one reason. The wives and girlfriends all want tickets to Ellen.
No way!
They're
That's so
you.
Amazing!
They're
as
using
soon as
you.
This show is done, I'll hear from none of them. But I happen to have been pretty good friends with the team doctor, and he said to me, you know, we're going to have a party at our home. We'd love to have you and your family come and see the cup. You know, we get it for one day. So, you know, I go home. I'm a big shot. I tell my wife, I tell my boys, this is really exciting. We're going to go. We're going to a small party at the doctor's house, just a few of us. He made it a big deal that we were invited, so we're going to see the cup. I get the address from the doctor's assistant. I'm all excited. I tell the kids, wear your jersey so we can get a picture. We drive up, and this is not an exaggeration. We drive up. We turn the corner on his block. He has invited the entire neighborhood to come see the Stanley Cup. And there is a line, and this guy has like a 3-acre property with a tennis court. There is a line out the gate onto the block of people waiting to go see the Cup. So I figure, oh, well, that's, you know, that's for later, but I'm part of the private party. No, not at all. I'm there. So I waited an hour and a half at this private party with my kids whining to get a 3-second picture with the cup. So that's my experience with the Stanley Cup.
Oh, so good.
It was after 2014 that I actually got really friendly with a number of the players. So hopefully now when they win the cup, I'll be invited to something.
We're talking like text level friendly now. You've made it to that stage.
Text level. I would say I'm really good friends with Andrei Kopitar. Text level, hang out level, go to dinner with the wives level.
Okay, like you're in. You
level.
Are in.
And then the other players are just text level. Like I text with a number of players.
Okay.
And I need to reiterate again, there is nothing. It still is crazy to me that I'm friends with actual professional hockey players. I spend my days with Ellen and Justin Timberlake and Julia Roberts. It's not a big thing. But the fact I still, like, my heart still goes crazy when I look down at my phone and it says Kopi.
I love that.
And I believe and I've said this before, I think it's whoever your childhood heroes are.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
My heroes as a kid were hockey players. It wasn't celebrities. So for me, that's still the most exciting thing.
I got my LA Kings Cup story. One of my good buddies is Jared Stoll. I texted him about you last night to see if there's any inside scoops to ask you. But he actually invited me to the second cup that they won.
Okay.
And I wasn't sure because I was obviously still playing. Should I go? Should I not go? And he called me right after he sent the text. I said, I don't know, buddy. You know. And he called me and he said, hey, man, I want you to be there. I want you to experience with me. There wasn't 300 people, 400 people like yours. It was just his family and friends. It was like maybe 30, 40 people. And, you know, obviously I didn't touch it and go near it. I went near it, but I didn't get a picture with it.
So you didn't drink out of it or anything like that?
I didn't, but it was really cool just to see the power of that Stanley Cup and how amazing it is. And, you know, you kind of freak out when you get near it and you know, being a player. And you know, so I was kind of the closest I've ever been to kind of, you know, touching it. But it was pretty cool that...
Did it bring you back to being a kid, just being, like, in the presence of the cup, like... outside of like the Hockey Hall of Fame or somewhere where you would see it, but just being in a normal setting with your boy and there's the cup and you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
it was gonna be crazy.
It was wild. So then another quick story about it. The next morning we played 9 holes with the Stanley Cup. So there was 5 of us and Stoli had it on the back of his golf cart, right? And so we get to the par 3 and it was 140 yards par 3. And if you know golf, it's not that far of
a
shot.
Yeah.
And so anyways, it's called closest to the cup, not closest to the pin, closest to
yeah,
the cup.
Nice.
So the cup master took the cup on the green and we all have our pitching wedges out and literally no one hit the green because it was just like weird, this aura of the cup and no one.
You don't want to get anywhere close. I wanted to ding it
absolutely, but I was 40 yards to the right, so just we were laughing about that.
And the 40 yards to the right is a good shot for me still.
All right, let's go back to Kopi. What could you tell us about Kopi as a person, like off the ice?
First of all, he is genuinely one of the nicest human beings I know, like through and through. He comes from a great family, and he's just such a sweet, nice guy. He also happens to be an unbelievable golfer who, when I golf with him, it's mostly just him making fun of me for 18 holes. And it doesn't, all I keep saying is, dude, you're a professional athlete. You're supposed to be good at all these things. I'm a Jew from New York who works in daytime television. The fact that I can get it within 30 feet of the hole, that's a big thing. He doesn't care. And he loves to just make me keep score so I can see how bad I'm doing compared to him. And yeah, it's a fun time with him.
Oh my gosh, you need to post some of the, you, next time you golf with him, you need to like capture it on Instagram, him chirping you, and send it out there for hockey fans everywhere.
He's relentless. It's never like, it doesn't let up. And I actually played with his father, who's also unbelievable. You know, the story with the father was that we were golfing and the whole time I'm calling him Mr. Kopitar, and he finally said, you know, you could call me by my first name. And I said, well, you know, I have respect. It's just a nice thing. Turns out he's a year younger than I am. His father is a year younger than I am, which is still crazy to me that I'm 52 and everybody on the ice could be my child. Because I like to think of myself as kind of their peers. Like, turns out I'm not.
Age is just a number. It's all about your vibe, and you got a young vibe.
Thank you. I try.
Is that why Ellen calls you Average Andy? Because you're just average at golf and average at...
I'm average at everything. The Average Andy thing started because they came up with a segment where they put me up against the best at things. So then I swam with Phelps. I dove with the Olympic gold champion. It's just another way for Ellen to humiliate me. So it's just me doing things with people who are the best at the world.
I saw you at the U.S. Open playing tennis with Djokovic and Rafa Nadal
and it wasn't great.
I saw you working on your wiener. I mean tweener.
Yeah, exactly.
That was so good.
Oh my God! How about that? And then of course it finally came to her saying they wanted to do the Kings, and I was like, this, I don't know. Like, I really hesitated because I was like, these are the one group of people in the world I don't want to embarrass myself in front of. But of course I did, and it was humiliating, but also one of the best days of my life.
That's
to play
wicked.
Goalie for the Kings during a practice was just, it was incredible.
Yeah, worth the humiliation, I'm sure.
There were a couple moments where I go, how is this happening?
like pinch yourself
I've
moments.
I've never felt less cool in my life.
Well, what about Ellen? What does she think of hockey?
She is amused by my love of it and by my, you know, when we were on the cup run, me doing everything to change the tape times of the shows. The good news is, like I said, Ed Glavin, who I work with, is a huge hockey fan and a Flyer fan, but I've brought him to all the Kings Cups games, and so he got invested a little bit.
Ooh, is he jealous of you right now, sitting here talking to Scott Hartnell?
I literally sent him the text yesterday the second I got it, and he was like, what? How is that happening? And I was like, no, it's what I do. I talk to Flyers.
I'll send my love to Ed. What's up, Ed?
But so he and I would change tape times of the show so we could make it to the Cup games because they were doing them early. She, I've gotten her to watch one game during the Olympics, and she goes, oh, I get it. This is really great. But she's so invested in football and other sports that I just, you know, the big goal is the next time we're on a cup run, she's coming to a game with me.
Oh, yeah, she has to. She's got to go to a playoff game.
I've explained it to her. The second you get to a game and see a live hockey game, it'll change you forever. The greatest thing about having season tickets is bringing people to their first hockey game and seeing them go, oh, this is unbelievable. You know,
it's so true. I say it too all the time to people that it's like it's one of the best sports to watch live in person because you realize how fast everybody is, how talented they are, and it's just there's an energy at a hockey game that you can't really describe to someone unless they actually go. So different
exactly.
than on TV.
And it's weird. I'm all good with the fact that there's less fighting, but whenever I bring someone to their first game, all I'm thinking is, please let there be a fight. that just cements it. When you just see people throwing fists at each other, you're just like, I mean, what's better than this?
Outside of Kopitar, like, do you have a favorite LA Kings moment, a favorite goal? I mean, over the years, what is your favorite moment during those
Martinez,
runs?
Martinez.
Oh, that goal was epic.
Yeah. It was against the Rangers, which wasn't great, but it was just an unbelievable moment. And the best part of that was that my wife, we were in double overtime, and my wife says to me, because one of the boys yawned, she said, if this goes to triple overtime, we're going to leave, right? I go, are you kidding me?
No.
She goes, but the boys are getting tired. I go, honey, I need you to be on board with this. Okay?
You're like, this is sacrilege
until
to leave.
The game is over. I would say she's she likes hockey. She's not. She has nowhere near the obsession I have. She likes it. The kids love it, but she hasn't fallen in love with it the same way. And when we don't make the playoffs, she dares to say things like, "Well, we'll save some money at least."
And it's true. Like you can't leave before the game's over, especially in the playoffs. Like, that's just
especially
that was the thing. When I went to Ranger game, the few games I would go actually with my dad, it could be a tie game, and with like 4 minutes left, he'd be like, we should go. We got to beat the traffic. It was all about beating the traffic. And I made a big deal here to try and stay till the end of every game, unless it's really bad.
Well, we appreciate you for that, for sure. Let's talk about Chrissy Teigen, because anytime a celebrity of that magnitude is talking about hockey, we at the NHL, we love it. We love getting that spotlight on the game, especially in the United States. We saw you and her going back and forth a little bit. Chrissy Teigen and hockey, what do you think? You think she could become a diehard fan?
I am fully working on getting her invested. She's one of the people I've become friends with through the show, and I'm a huge fan of hers. And she is just so much fun. She just doesn't understand hockey, but when she watches it, it's definitely exciting for her. And so after this whole tweet thing happened with Stoli and her and me, I've been on her, and I'm going to absolutely get her to a Kings game.
You got to make sure she live tweets.
Absolutely. And Chrissy Teigen, genuinely, her personality is made for hockey. Like she's like me. She will, the thrill of it, she'll lose her mind. She will absolutely lose her mind at a Kings game. I just got to figure out which one in the new year, but she's absolutely going to a game.
Yeah, you got to be strategic about it, right? You got to make sure it's a good opponent. It's going to be a good game. I'm with you on that.
And she feels like a big VIP. We'll do the whole, they take her under the tunnel, like the players, you know. These celebrities, they like to feel fancy when they go to these things. So we'll have to do
That's
all
shocking.
That.
A lot of pranks and stuff on the Ellen show, and you're involved in a lot of it. Is there one person that's been pranked whose reaction is just your all-time favorite?
That's a great question. I think when we scared Diddy, we jumped out of a box. The way he jumped out and looked like he was going to get into a fight with whoever just scared him, and then the way he calmed down was pretty impressive. But I have to say, every time we scare some, it's why we keep doing it. It's just, and again, I'm the butt of a lot of the jokes here, and I also get very frightened very easily, so I kind of hate that we do it, but at the same time, it's hilarious to me every time, and it's, you know, that's just who Ellen is. She's like a 12-year-old kid, and the excitement of being able to scare people, it never gets old to her. Jimmy Kimmel was unbelievable. He actually chased the person and tackled the person who scared him and pulled the mask off of him, which was unbelievable. You can see that on YouTube.
Oh, I'll be YouTubing that one for sure.
Yeah, they've all been great. And then there are certain people you just will never, you know, you don't scare Oprah when she comes on. You don't scare Barack Obama. There's just certain people who come on. You go, okay, we're not going to scare these people. But the ones we scare, pretty much everyone. And it's funny. We now have celebrities who say to their publicists after the show, "I'm kind of bummed they didn't scare me." Like they think if they're not scare worthy, they think they haven't done a good job at the show.
It's like a badge of honor.
Yeah, exactly. And the people who we've scared before and come back, they're frightened the entire interview. You can tell they're looking around, they're watching the table, and we've had to keep upping the game of how we scare people on the show, because we had the table and people come out of that, but then people knew that the table was there, so we would lift it and they would see that nobody's in there, and then we'd close it and then the person would come out. We actually built a tunnel. So there's a tunnel now under our studio.
The table
looks empty, and then once we close it and show the celebrity there's no one there, we have the person crawl under a tunnel. Yeah, that's how insane we are.
Wow.
That's great.
Yeah.
Does anyone dare to scare Ellen?
I've tried 1,000 times. It doesn't work.
Doesn't work?
The most, you know. She sends me into a haunted house with a celebrity every year, and so every year for 17 years I've tried to find a way to get revenge and you know, because she's constantly scaring me. And she doesn't scare, and it's so unbelievably frightening. There was one time we had Steve Carell come and scare her, and she swears that she wasn't scared, but when you watch it really slow, she had a moment where she jumped.
But there's
nothing worse than a person who doesn't scare, who does all the scaring, because how do you get back at her?
I don't understand people that can't get spooked.
We'll have to rack our brains later.
I spook myself out.
We're up for suggestions.
Hey, you bring up Steve Carell. The morning show, I'm obsessed with it. I talk about it on this podcast a lot. Have you watched it?
I've watched the entire 10 episodes.
Okay, so you love it too.
I love it. I think it's great. I think everyone in that show is so good. I think Jennifer Aniston is amazing. I think Reese. I think Crudup, the one who Billy Crudup, who
plays the executive.
He's incredible.
Yeah,
he's so
funny.
Good, and it's so, and it gives me so much anxiety, because there was a moment in my career where I thought, should I go into one of these morning shows? I had an offer to, when I was in New York, on Rosie, to go to the Today Show. And I am so glad I didn't choose that. I mean, just the pressure of the news, the pressure of all of it, every time the news is breaking, and it's all just, it gives me so much anxiety, that show.
Yeah, the acting is brilliant in it. But I also love the little things that they work into the script that you wouldn't necessarily understand if you didn't work in media, like when they refer to, like, the C block. And I'm like,
exactly.
People at home are probably like, what are they talking
exactly.
about?
But, yeah, no, I think it feels very authentic. The times I've been in the control rooms of news operation, it feels really, they definitely had real people to advise them how to do this, because it feels like a full-on real show.
Yeah, it does for sure.
Yeah, and the show is so good, and it deals with such important issues, and it's have you seen the whole thing, or are you watching along with everyone?
So I'm watching along, like, week to week.
Okay.
I just caught up on the most recent episode, where this won't spoil anything for the listeners, but they go back to Steve Carell's character's 50th birthday.
Yes.
So that's the episode that I just finished.
Okay,
so
got it.
I still have a couple more.
Just wait. That's all. I'm
so excited. Like, my boyfriend makes fun of me how obsessed I am with this show.
No,
like,
I know.
I read the reviews after online and everything. Like, I am a crazy person. But I'll shift this back to hockey, since that's why you're on the show. Obviously, you love hockey. You must have played growing up, or still, do you still play? Do you play in a men's league or anything?
Growing up, I played ice hockey in New York. And because it's so hard to get ice time, I didn't start playing till I was like 14, and I would play at 8 o'clock at night. And then once I went to NYU and I was an adult, they would only give all the ice time was for kids. So I would play at midnight at Sky Rink, which was right near, because that was the only place in Manhattan where I lived that you could play hockey. And so I would play, you know, midnight to two, and then go to class at 8 a.m. And so I played all through that, all through my years working at Rosie, I was playing. And then I got out here, took a little break to go to drug rehab, you know, like people do. And then I fell out of hockey for a while and started up again playing roller hockey. There was a league and they needed people, and I figured, okay, I'll give this a try, and I fell in love with roller hockey. So that's what I'm doing now is roller hockey, and I'm going to eventually get back to ice, but my kids play roller,
okay.
And they absolutely love it, and every time I take them to the ice, they're good at it. They love this roller hockey, which is not really hockey, I explained to them.
But, it's a form. It's a branch
off. One of them's a goalie, and he's going to start playing ice very soon.
Oh, my gosh. One of your kids is a goalie?
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to be nerve-wracking for you.
They're unbelievable forwards, and they play together. And because they're twins, one of them was like, he did not like that they always do the same thing. So he decided he wanted to play goalie, which was heartbreaking to me and the coach because they were unbelievable. You know, when you have twins, they're like the Sedins. They just knew how to pass to each other. They knew where the other one was at all times. And it was like a dream for me to watch them. And then one said, you know what? I don't want to do what Ethan does. I want to be a goalie. And I was like, okay. Ruin daddy's fun.
So now do you work on his style in the basement then? Do you fire pucks at him at night?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And we go into the garage and I just shoot and constantly. And he's getting better and better. And that's why we're going to put him on the ice now, because he's really getting good. He loves it. And it's fun to go to when we take him to games. It's so much fun because all he's doing is watching Jonathan Quick or Campbell or whoever the goalie is. That's all he's watching.
Yeah, those are great guys to look up to. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's he pays attention to nothing else. And so he does, you know, like I said, he's playing roller hockey now. And when he gets out there, he does that thing where he in front of the crease where they're scraping the ice with their skates.
The stops, and I'm back and forth.
And I'm like, dude, that's because they're doing it on ice. You don't need to do that in a roller rink.
That's so cute.
That's adorable.
He imitates every move of Jonathan Quick.
That's so cute.
Listen, Andy, you have been an absolute blast. I'm thinking, like, the next time the Kings are on a run or in the playoffs, like, we got to come up with, like, an average Andy, like, Kings correspondent segment or something and get you on NHL Network.
How about Scotty Hartnell teaches Andy how to fight?
There it is. See, this is why you're a producer.
That's going to be great TV. That'll be great TV.
Listen, when you're in New York, don't shy from us. Send us an email. We'll make it happen. We'll get you and Hartsey on the ice together. That'd be awesome.
Nothing would make me happier.
That'd be awesome.
All right, before we let you go, because we know you're a busy guy, what can viewers of Ellen look forward to this holiday season? We know she's always giving stuff away, but what's the deal? What's the scoop this year?
Well, like you just said, we're in the middle of our 12 days of giveaways, but we're also in the middle of a 3-night special on NBC called Ellen's Greatest Night of Giveaways. It started last night. If you hadn't seen it, all the clips are online, and then it's on tonight and tomorrow night. It's an hour of Ellen and other celebrities just rocking people's worlds, literally changing their lives. Paying off mortgages, buying people houses, like life-changing stuff.
Oh, I'm getting chills
and
right now.
It's just, you know, it's really feel-good and amazing.
And that's exactly what we need this time of year.
And then we have 2 weeks off where I can go 2 weeks without worrying about Ellen torturing me or scaring me. So.
Well, enjoy it.
Thanks for having me. Happy holidays.
Yes, enjoy the holiday. And to our listeners, make sure you follow Andy online. And Andy, I do want to say your story is incredible. I read the article about you a couple of weeks ago. Our friend Amanda, who covers the Devils, had posted it, and I read it. And I just want to say I think it's incredible that you shared your story. And kudos to you, because it's been a journey, and we're really, really grateful that you made time to come on the show.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, cheers, Andy.
Bye-bye.
All right, well, now we have to make the Scott Hartnell-Andy Lassner segment happen.
I would love to. Andy, it's
you think average Andy could handle it, learning how to fight from Scotty Hartz?
Well, you got to learn how to, you know, take one glove off at a time. You got to make it a show. You got to get it center ice. You got to... You know, get the crowd into it.
Okay, it's got to be big time.
Yeah, I can't wait to do it, Andy. It's on, buddy.
Oh, my gosh, we have to make this happen. Oh my gosh, I'd be so pumped. You have to somehow like work it in there though. Like you need to show part of this on Ellen. Like it needs to be on Ellen.
And then yeah, then let's go to the show.
Actually,
I'll
no,
help
no.
you produce. I'll
no,
help
no.
you produce.
It needs to be on NHL now. And then Ellen can have
okay,
it. How
perfect,
about that? All right, we're coming to the end of the episode here, but I think we should address the big story this week. You know, the Dallas Stars letting go of head coach Jim Montgomery. We don't know exactly what happened. We just know that it was unprofessional conduct away from the ice. And, you know, it's sort of been this similar story happening this year in the NHL, and it's kind of heavy, but we've seen, you know, teams work through it. The Calgary Flames being the prime example, and then the Dallas Stars go out last night and they win on the heels of their coach being surprisingly fired. Like, I don't think any of the players saw that coming. What would that be like to deal with as a player? Because on a game day, it used to be rare, but now we've seen it twice in the span of a week.
Yeah, you know, on game day, you know, the guys are so focused, you know, they're dialed in that morning skate, they have their pregame meal, and when you throw a bombshell that your head coach that, you know, I know a lot of the guys there respect, they love, they care about.
They were winning.
They were winning. It's not like they were, you know, 0-6 at the beginning of the year, so... you know, Jim Montgomery has one of the best hockey minds in the league right now as a coach. So unfortunately, he's not there anymore, and they got to go on and continue and play the game tonight. And you know, you got to give Dallas Stars a lot of credit to the way they came out. Obviously, Ben Bishop was unbelievable in that 2-0 win. But you know, just the emotions, you know, yeah, you can go out and play when there's emotions or distractions, but you know, before, after the game, it's you know, I don't think it's probably set in yet.
No, it's a draining day, though, I would imagine. I mean, you come in, you get this news that you're not expecting, then you've got media asking you all about it. You don't know what to say because you don't really know. On top of it, you've got a relationship with the guy. You like the guy. You see him all the time, every single day for however many months, and then he's just not there anymore. And, you know, I think it's easy from the outside to be like, ah, whatever, it's sports, it's part of it. But, you know, working in the media, I still remember clear as day the first time a co-host that I was working with was let go. And I remember coming into work and being pulled into an office and being told that, you know, like he had been let go. And I was like shocked. I like had a pit in my stomach. I felt so bad for him. And I actually like I left work that day and was and they actually, you know, to the company's credit said, you know, if this is really hard for you, like you can take the day off. And I went and met him, you know, down the street at a restaurant and had a couple of pops and you know, talked through it. But I would imagine it's a similar feeling when you're so used to seeing someone like that and then to have to, you know, put it to the side and play.
Yeah, and be hard. You know, it's not like it's you know, behind the scenes guy or, you know, a trainer in the back or something like that. This is your head coach that is always in the limelight, that is giving you your ice time, who's, you know, making the decisions on who you play with, everything like that. So the emotions were, I'm sure, down for the whole team, but they were able to, you know, kind of amp it up for the 60-minute game. But, you know, it's crazy, this hockey world that we're not crazy. It's good where it's going. But just something like that happens. It's just a crazy day for the Dallas Stars, and I'm sure all the fans are wondering what's going on as well. So it's you know, I'm sure there'll be some more answers here in the days, weeks to come. But we're just you know, just thinking about everybody involved.
Yeah, I think that was the hard part yesterday, being at work and talking about it, is that we don't know exactly what happened, and I'm kind of on both sides of it, because on the one side I'm like, man, we need transparency. The fans deserve that. You know, the team deserves that. You know, hockey deserves that. But then on the other side, I'm like, the fact that we don't know creates all this speculation, and speculation can be nasty in 2019 on Twitter with rumors and speculating what it could be. And I don't think that that's fair to Jim or his family or people that love and care about him. So for me, I just want the speculation to stop, because I've been at the center of that before, and it is not fun at all when people are assuming things about your personal life that aren't true.
Yeah, and we're human beings at the end of the day. You know, yeah, you're an athlete, yeah, you're a head coach, and you're maybe put a little bit on a pedestal, I guess, compared to everybody else that's coming to watch the games and stuff. But at the end of the day, he's a human being, and whether somebody needs help or, you know, to guide him through this tough time, whatever it is, you just hope that that people are there for him and care about him, and you know, that's, you know, with everybody in this world.
Yeah. Dallas Stars, though, they do get the win in their first game under interim head coach Rick Bowness, who's a Nova Scotia boy, so I love it. Happy for him, and by all accounts, apparently he's just an awesome dude. So yeah. The right guy to sort of be taking over and getting this team through something that's probably behind the scenes very hard for them. So hopefully we won't have to keep talking about this stuff in the future, but we had a good show talking chirping and talking to Andy Lassner. So I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that this Average Andy with Scott Hartnell segment comes to fruition.
I'm sure. Well, let's make it happen. We'll stay on him. We'll stay on him.
Yeah, so you got to tweet it. Just start tweeting him incessantly. Just don't leave him alone. All right. If you're listening to the podcast, we would love it for you to leave a comment or a review, rate us, subscribe, tell your friends, but only if you have good things to say. If you have bad things to say, don't tell anyone. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your time, and we'll see you next week. Happy holidays.